Back at it for you. New month, Tuesday, September 1st, 2020, on Connecticut Today. 3 p.m. hour, we featured a regional director of the U.S. Census talking to us about how Bridgeport is doing and the state of Connecticut in general for the 2020 national headcount. In the 4 o'clock hour, another expert on what the Catholic vote has done over the years in elections, what happened in 2016, and what might happen as Joe Biden takes on Donald Trump come November.
Back here on Connecticut Today on WICC 600 on the radio and online at WICC600.com. Yeah, the U.S. Census, it's still going. The dates and due dates on things were shifted just a little because of COVID-19. We have a guest now to talk about how well the country's doing and how well Bridgeport is doing and Stamford and Connecticut as a whole. We welcome to the lines here at WICC, Jeff Baylor. Jeff directs the Census Bureau's New York Regional Office. Now, that office is responsible for data collection, data dissemination, and geographic operations in Puerto Rico and 8 states, including, yes, the state of Connecticut. Jeff, Paul Pacelli here. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Paul. How are you today?
I'm good, Jeff. I am good. So in your role with the census, I know I kind of gave a crude description of that a few seconds ago, but Jeff, what are you tasked with in your capacity with the U.S. Census?
Yeah, so we're one of 6 regions across the country, and our job is really the data collection. It's working with partners throughout the state of Connecticut to educate our local communities on the importance of the census, talking about the laws that protect the data that we collect and how easy it is. And then when it comes time to, we need to hire people. We need to recruit them, hire them, train them, and prepare them to go and knock on doors throughout every community throughout Connecticut that has yet to fill out their census form.
Now, I have a couple of friends who have worked for the census in past years, so I'm a little familiar with the process. But, Jeff, what was it like staffing up this year amid COVID-19 and all that? Was I correct in reading a couple of weeks ago that the staffing is still a little tenuous, not where it would normally be in a non-pandemic year or not?
Yeah, so we had hoped to hire over 300,000 people nationwide, and not all areas, all of our offices have met their local goals. But in Connecticut, we're doing amazing. I mean, Connecticut's one of the top 5 states right now, and a lot of that has to do with Lieutenant Governor Bicewicz, our elected officials throughout the state, our local partners, whether it's a faith-based leader, whether it's a community-based organizer. Just sharing the information about how important the census is. We have almost 3,000 employees throughout the state of Connecticut that are out there knocking on doors right now. And our offices, the 3 offices that cover all of Connecticut, range anywhere from 53% done to 80% done. Mm. So things are going very well throughout Connecticut.
Unfortunately, though, Jeff, and some of the numbers that your office has provided me with here, Bridgeport had a 66, almost a 67% rate of compliance with the census in 2010. Now, though, we're only at about 50%. Talk about that and what's going to be coming up in the next few weeks.
Yeah, so we've seen this, and this is a trend across our region, across the nation. Our more densely populated areas, COVID-19 really played a trick on things because we know in these densely populated areas that the most powerful impact we have are our local partners bringing people together, whether it's at the local library or at coffee hour after Sunday service, talking about the importance of the census and then giving them the opportunity to fill it out right then and there, whether it's at a library computer, whether it's a tablet that a partner or the Census Bureau brings in. And all those plans that were put in place back in, you know, year and a half ago, getting ready to implement in March and April and May of this year had to be canceled because it wasn't safe to do so. And so now the job of the census taker is to go and knock on those doors that haven't responded. And a lot of times that's the last piece of motivation a household needs because they've heard about the importance from our partners throughout the state. They've heard about how the data is protected and can never be used against them for harm. They just need that last reminder that, hey, now's the time to go online, 2020census.gov, or call one of our toll-free telephone numbers.
What would those numbers be, Jeff?
Yeah, so for English, 844-330-2020. For Spanish, you can call 844-468-2020. We have additional 11 lines. Check it out on our website, 2020census.gov, one for each language that we support. So if you call the Portuguese line, someone who speaks Portuguese will pick up the phone and immediately converse with you.
Okay, English 844-330-2020, Spanish 844-468-2020. Jeff, talk a little about the attempts that are made now above and beyond folks who maybe haven't phoned in or used the internet to do this. Person-to-person contacts, knocking at the door. How many times, for example, will the census folks attempt to contact a household?
Yeah, so we have the ability to contact households at least six times. So if we knock on a door and someone answers and they complete their census right there, they're done. You know, we don't need to come back. And when we're at a household and we knock on a door and they don't respond, we leave a little notice of visit. And that's just a little sticker. Think of it like when UPS or FedEx drops the package off at your home, lets you know that we stop by. Let you know that we'll be back in a few days. Or if you want, go online. Here's your census ID. Here's the web address you can go to. Or here's a toll-free telephone number that you can call. And that's extremely, we've seen an uptick in self-response throughout Connecticut because of that. Because they're hearing from the lieutenant governor and elected officials and their worship leaders. And they get that little reminder at the door. They're deciding to go online and fill it out.
Obviously, this is directly connected, as the mayor of Bridgeport always emphasizes, with how much federal money areas and cities and municipalities get. So what is your goal here? I mean, obviously, the goal would be 100%, Jeff. But looking at things now, what's the target here? Does the Census Bureau hope to... Is it a good job if you count 90%, 95%? I mean, you know as well as I, people always fall through the cracks. But what's the optimistic goal, do you think?
Yeah, believe it or not, our goal is 100%. And we will visit 100% of the addresses throughout the state of Connecticut. As of yesterday at 3 o'clock, of course, 68.8% of households across Connecticut self-responded. We had already counted 19.2% via non-response follow-up. So that's a total of 87.9% of households across Connecticut have been enumerated. We only have about 12% to go. And we're going to continue. These 3,000 plus people are going to continue over the next few days, through September 30th, to reach every household. After six visits, seven visits, when we get into our closeout phase, we have the ability to talk to a neighbor or a knowledgeable proxy that may be able to at least give us how many people live at that particular household. And that's what we'll do. The very end of the census is something we call imputation, where we basically we look at data around the house that has yet to respond to try and statistically determine what that household composition looks like. But that's less than 1% of the cases nationwide. We expect to get done in Connecticut in the next few weeks. We really do.
And finally, Jeff, then you folks at the Census Bureau and the federal bureaus, you then take all these numbers and you crunch them down. You mash them up over the next couple of years, correct, to decide apportionment and other key services, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when we look at the importance of the data from the number of seats Connecticut will have in the U.S. House of Representatives, electoral college votes are tied to this. You know, Connecticut will use this data as a state to redistrict, to draw their voting precincts, their school districts. And then it's the federal funding. I mean, hundreds of billions of dollars of federal funding are disseminated every year based upon formulas that use census data. So it's important that we get an accurate count so communities know exactly what they need. They understand their needs, and then they get the resources they need to fulfill that.
All right, Jeff Baylor, director of the Census Bureau's New York Regional Office, responsible for data collection in Puerto Rico and eight states, including the state of Connecticut. Jeff Baylor, good luck to you and your staff, all your census takers and all the folks that work for the census. And we thank you for stopping by. Thanks, Jeff. Be good.
Thanks so much for the conversation, Paul. Take care.
And we continue right here on Connecticut Today on WICC 600 and on the web at WICC600.com. Joining us right now to talk about the Catholic vote, perhaps, in the upcoming election and how that might shake out and issues facing the Catholic electorate. We welcome back Dr. Matthew Brunson. He's the executive editor of the EWTN, known as the Catholic Channel, technically the Eternal Word Television Network. Dr. Brunson, Paul here once again at WICC. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you today?
I'm not too bad. Doing well, all things considered. First of all, Dr. Brunson, if we could shake something out here at the beginning. I've read, yes, Donald Trump won the Catholic vote back in 2016. No, he didn't. Maybe he did. It was very close. What are your thoughts on that? What have you read and heard about that in the subsequent 4 years?
Well, that's right. Initial assumption was coming out of the 2016 election was that Donald Trump actually carried the Catholic vote. I've seen numbers anywhere from 51-49 to 52-48. Some subsequent studies have called that slightly into question. I think the best way to describe it, in all fairness to the numbers and the surveys, is that he effectively split the Catholic vote with Hillary Clinton, but carried sufficient Catholics, to have a slight advantage. But the most important part of that wasn't necessarily who won the Catholic vote, but where they won the Catholic vote. And what I mean by that is that Donald Trump was elected president by virtue of the Catholic vote in key parts of the country, in particular Pennsylvania, Ohio, places like Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. Working-class Catholics really turned out for him. Active Catholics who go to Mass tended to vote for him. And, of course, pro-life Catholics sided with him by very, very strong majorities.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I talked to friends of mine politically active and not, and I'm sure you encounter this, too. We've heard about this, too, in the evangelical community. You know, there are people who are saying, well, how could anyone of faith vote for a man who has had multiple marriages, multiple alleged affairs, is mixed up in all this stuff? How do you answer that, Dr. Brunson? Is it because he checks off the boxes, as it were, for Catholics on some major issues? Is that it?
Well, I think one of the things that the Trump campaign was very successful in doing in 2016, and we're seeing once again that this is going to be of great importance to them, is reaching out to voters of faith who may be willing to overlook some of the very issues that you've just raised because of the importance of certain issues to them. Mm-hmm. We're seeing, for example, the question of religious liberty. We're seeing as well the question of life, of abortion, of euthanasia. So these are things that a lot of voters, a lot of Catholics are weighing as they head to the polls. And it's one of the reasons why we're seeing such a sharp contrast being drawn, for example, the Republican National Committee, the convention this week, in contrast to what happened in the Democratic National Convention last week, where, as the New York Times is reporting today, abortion was not even mentioned by name. There were just some vague references to it, whereas with the, frankly, unprecedented presentation by Abby Johnson and others, the question of life, the question of abortion, is seen clearly by the Trump campaign as a major one for regaining the same voters they had in 2016.
Is there then the supposition, Dr. Brunson, that some of those Catholics, even though they were wary of Mr. Trump in 2016, has he disappointed them from his personal actions enough that they've fallen away and he has to regain them?
Well, the polling that we've seen now consistently really from the start of the year, and we could, in fact, go back to November of last year to EWTN News's partnership with Real Clear Opinion Research in polling Catholics. And this is also supported by things like Pew Research and elsewhere. Right now, President Trump is losing the Catholic vote to former Vice President Joe Biden. The numbers fluctuate. It's hovering around 52-47. So clearly he has his work cut out. He is still being steadfastly followed by, as I was mentioning earlier, Catholics who tend to go to Mass more often, Catholics who are very involved in the life issue. Those Catholics who tend not to go to Mass more frequently are much more likely to be gravitating toward Joe Biden. Mm. Now, one of the factors that's coming into play, of course, is the impact of the coronavirus, the economy, the political unrest. So how Catholics ultimately decide on those issues, I think, are going to be crucial. But we keep coming back to what are the keys for the individual campaigns. With Biden's outreach to faith voters, if you noticed last week, there was a great deal of stress by the Biden campaign on his faith life, pictures of him with the rosary, stories about how faith has allowed him to survive through so many family hardships. The Trump campaign is focusing on some of those key issues that matter to Catholics, things like the life issues and religious liberty. So both campaigns, I think, recognize very strongly that whoever ends up with not necessarily the majority of Catholic voters, but the most dedicated, ardent voters among Catholics will likely win this election.
All right, Dan, we'll have more with Dr. Matthew Brunson straight ahead. Of course, we've had him on numerous times before to give us a different aspect on the news. You know, religion does play a role in how elections happen. Catholics, as Dr. Brunson said there, are mainly about 50-50 split now on the president. Many other blocks, for example, many Black Baptists, Christians, evangelicals, overwhelmingly vote Democratic. American Jewish voters generally break about 70-30 in favor of Democrats. American Muslim voters tend to break about, again, 70-30 in favor of Democrats. And again, there are all these divisions about Mormon voters, voters of all different religions and faiths. And as Dr. Brunson pointed out there, it is something that was almost unheard of to speak about, you know, years and years ago in past elections. In fact, when we continue with Dr. Matthew Brunson straight ahead, we will talk about how that has kind of changed, and all the way back to, for the people, most of the people in this audience, there may have been examples previous to that, but for most of the people in this audience, you had a scenario where it was Jack Kennedy's run for president in 1960. If you read anything about that run, or maybe experienced it yourself 60 years ago, if you're in your 70s or 80s, you'll remember that, you know, you can't vote for a Catholic, right? Don't ever think of voting for a Catholic. I mean, the going theme back then was, if you elect a Catholic, the Pope will run America, or whatever Catholic you elect. If you do that, they will check with the Vatican on major things like war policy and economic policy and all of that. The guest is Dr. Matthew Brunson, executive news editor at EWTN, the Eternal Word Television Network. That's pretty much known by you and I as the Catholic Channel, if you have it on your TV provider. Okay, coming up to 4:16, traffic and weather together on the sixes on a partly cloudy, partly sunny Tuesday edition of Connecticut Today right here on WICC.
And we continue right here on WICC 600. The guest, Dr. Matthew Brunson, a few more minutes with him. He's executive editor at EWTN News, the Eternal Word television network. Dr. Brunson, I was struck there during the break doing some math. In the 60 years that has passed from the 1960 election to where we are in 2020, a watershed moment for Catholics back then. Even though, you know, we all read in the history books, don't vote for JFK because the Pope, the Vatican, will control the U.S. He'll answer to the Pope. And now 60 years later, as you mentioned before we took a break, you have Joe Biden openly talking about praying the rosary. Quite a stark contrast.
Oh, I think that's a remarkable contrast. And we can even go back further to 1928, when Governor of New York Al Smith was running for president as a Catholic. And at that point, I would say, it's based on studies and history, that probably as much as 40 to 50% of the average Americans were very concerned about voting for a Catholic simply because he was a Catholic. Mm-hmm. And Al Smith faced some absolutely staggering anti-Catholicism in the 28 race. Then we jump ahead to 1960. And as you know, JFK still faced a lot of questioning, a lot of fear on the part of some across the country. And that was a factor in the race. It's one of the reasons I think why it was as close as it was with Richard Nixon. Since then, we have seen the Catholic American population really coming out, so to speak. The average Catholic voter today tends to vote more or less along the same lines as the average American voter. It's one of the reasons why Catholics have tended to vote for the winner in almost every presidential election, certainly in the modern times of American political life.
You know, Dr. Brunson, I have noticed, and undoubtedly you've reported on this as well, like other faith communities, there is friction in the Catholic faith community when it comes to politics. There are gaps in what one side or the other believes. I did notice a couple of weeks ago, I believe it was a group of bishops or clergy came out and said, yeah, despite what the Democrats say or don't do on abortion or do on abortion, we think that the Biden presidency, I believe what they said was it would better serve those on the margins. So, yeah, it does look like there's a little bit of a, as in other religions, a disconnect or a little internal strife here in the Catholic family as to who to vote for.
Well, I think one of the things that we see among the Catholic voters is a question of how they're forming their consciences and what are their priorities. And in a way, that's one of the points I was making a little while ago, that in the 1960 election, we had John F. Kennedy carrying about 90% of the Catholic vote, if not more than that. I wonder why that 10% didn't actually vote for him. Mm. Now the Catholic vote is very much divided. As you can see from the way that the elections have turned out in recent years, this 2016 is a good example, and this year seems to be very similar. So what we are seeing, too, is as we are in almost every other aspect of the country, political polarization is also finding its way into religious affiliation. And so the great divide that now exists culturally, socially, and politically in many ways is also reflected certainly in the wider Catholic vote. It's why in these types of very tight elections, and I think this is going to be the case for a while, carrying the Catholic vote, and again, which Catholic vote, is going to matter very much for each candidate.
Dr. Matthew Brunson has been the guest. He is the executive editor of EWTN, the Eternal Word Television Network. Check them out on your television provider if you have not already done so. Dr. Brunson, always good to have you here at WICC. We appreciate the time. Thank you.
Oh, anytime. Good to be with you.